Hey, pass the salt. It's time.
Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know what, why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time. It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a Coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Christmas, a week from the... I look down there, it's 12-18-2020, a week from Christmas. Think about all this. We started all this pandemic stuff, that mask wearing. When was it? Was it back in February? Was it in March? They just wanted to flatten the curve. Remember that? Man, this has been... 2020 has been the craziest year of my existence. That's for sure. Excited to have all of you with us today. We got that. Tell somebody right now. I'm going to stall here for about 3 or 4 minutes. Call somebody, text somebody, email somebody, say, you got to tune in to Coach today. You got to tune in because we're going to go where very few people will go. And that's, we're going to talk about the Nephilim, the fallen angels, giants, mound builders, because we're going to go, as some of you know, we're going to go to the Serpent Mound on this Sunday coming up, and I'm doing a little bit of legwork right now. Somebody just in the queue told me that the Serpent Mound doesn't open until 2 p.m. This is the winter solstice, folks. This is a high holiday for the demonic world on the 20th. Stephanie's told us all about that. This is their Christmas. Okay. And so we're going to tread on that ground on their, what they consider to be their high holiday. And from what I've been telling everybody to meet us there at noon, but evidently it doesn't open until 2 o'clock. Somebody's checking on that for us right now. So I'll try to give you an update on that before the show's over. We're going to go down there. We're going to do a prayer walk. We're going to anoint this place. We're going to break in every stronghold, every portal, every connection to the enemy. And we're just going to declare that Jesus Christ is Lord, not only over the Serpent Mound, but over all of America, all the earth. Jesus is Lord over all the earth. So we're going to be proclaiming that loud and proud on Sunday afternoon. Anybody have any questions about that before we move on? We got Fritz Zimmerman coming in. I said, is there any questions? Didn't give anybody a chance to ask one. So does anybody have anything they'd like to say or add or questions or concerns? Hey, Fritz, and those of you who are listening for the first time, we're like a family in here, brother. We get in here every morning. Bunches of us get in here every morning, and we dive into the Word. And one of the things that we really focus on, Fritz, is we believe there's a lot of things that we've been taught that aren't true, and a lot of things that are true that we haven't been taught. And this is a theology-free area. You come in here, you believe whatever you throw on the table, whatever it is, and you want to defend your belief, and you go for it, and we're all going to try to come to some type of consensus of whether it's true or not. It doesn't really matter whether it's true or not. And I try to tell people that the Bible tells us my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And if it isn't true, I don't want to know it. And if it is true, I do want to. I'm a big boy. I can handle it, all of it. I guess there's a lot of good stuff we could be talking on, but I want to turn this totally over to Fritz Zimmerman today. And Mike, if you can just kind of throw one of Fritz's, maybe his Facebook page or something up on the screen. Fritz is joining us audio only today, but we'll have things we'll be flopping up on the screen. I've only met Fritz once. L.A. Marzulli, many of you know that name. L.A. Marzulli, I live right here in the Licking County area of Ohio, which L.A. Marzulli loves to call Nephilim Central. And I had the opportunity about a year, maybe a year and a half ago now, to go to what they call the Mound Builders Country Club here in Newark, Ohio, which is a golf course. Beautiful, beautiful golf course. All the time I was a kid growing up, everybody knew about the Mound Builders. In fact, Newark, Ohio is known as the Mound City. That's one of our nicknames, the Mound City, the land of legend. I never, ever knew. As a kid, I used to go play in what they call the Circle Mounds, which are also right here in Newark, Ohio. And we were told that the Hopewell Indians built it. And we didn't think anything about it. It's what history told us. And it hasn't been until about the last 10 or 15 years of my life that I've begun to get an unveiling and a revealing exactly what that thing is all about, and the mounds and the mound builders. And they really, the world's expert on that is Fritz Zimmerman. Mike, do you have it on the screen? Because I'm not there yet. I'm going to make sure that you're hidden clear down here someplace. Fritz Zimmerman, there it is. Fritz is like, folks, he's the guy. Fritz Zimmerman is the guy, and we're honored that he would join us today. And so, Fritz, going to Genesis 6, there were if we might throw that up on the screen real quickly. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit behind the eight ball here, just getting my feet under me. Genesis 6, because we hear about a lot. Steve Quayle, a lot of those guys talk about that, and the whole idea of the Nephilim and fallen angels and yada yada yada. What it says in Genesis 6, and it came to pass, there it is, thanks, Mike. And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his day shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days. We've all heard of Goliath, right? And also after that, folks, look at that. There were giants in the earth in those days and also after that. When the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, they became mighty men, which were men of renown. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had even made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I'm going to destroy man whom I've created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and creeping thing and fowls of the air, for it repented him that I'd ever made him. And so he found this guy named Noah who built a boat, built an ark. Wow, this is the beginning. Hey, Fritz, I've spoken long enough, brother. Just come on in, Fritz, and take off and run with this thing and go wherever you want to go.
Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. And yeah, you're talking about Genesis 6:4. So they were there before and after. That means before and after the flood. So pre-Noah and then post-Noah. So believing that story, one of Noah's sons' daughters must have been of the Nephilim bloodline. To regenerate the Nephilim. So there might have been a bit of a difference between pre-flood and post-flood giants, but that's the before and after.
Hey, Fritz, is there any historical evidence or proof that the giants are actually here, Fritz? Because when I'm having discussions with people like that, that's one thing. They just don't want to believe that. They say, well, where are the bones? If these giants are, where are they? Where are they, Fritz? Is there evidence?
Well, if you read my encyclopedia, you can put that up on the screen. I have 888 accounts of them finding large bones in the U.S. Most of them are in the Ohio Valley. So what archaeologists call Edina, and who I call the Amorites, and the Amorites were one of the accounted giants in the Bible, one of the tribes.
Folks, here in Ohio, they call them the Edina, A-D-E-N-A, the Edina Indians, and that's one of the tribes that they credit all of these mounds to. Go ahead, Fritz, sorry.
Okay, so they weren't Edina, they were Amorites. Same Amorites that are mentioned in the Bible. Amorites were a real tribe. We can document that they controlled Babylon from 2200 BC until 1600 BC. We know that they knew high math, they knew pi, square root. They had known the Pythagorean theorem 1,000 years before Pythagoras. So highly intelligent people. Hammurabi, Some may have heard of Hammurabi's laws. The first laws that were laid out in mankind's history. So a lot of advances. But what we find in the Ohio earthworks is that those were constructed using the same mathematics, trigonometry, Pythagorean's theorem, pi, square root, were all used in the construction of the Ohio earthwork. And, you know, not to degrade Native Americans, but Native Americans did not know advanced mathematics. So there's clue number one, but they weren't built by Native Americans. And there's probably no greater example of this advanced mathematics than at Newark, Ohio. And I sent you a series of graphics on Newark that I was going to talk about.
Okay, we can get them up there for you. We'll throw them up there.
Okay. First one is, it's a general layout of the Newark earthworks.
That's not the one he wants. There we go. The hinge and square, is that where it is, Fritz? Is that the one you want? Fritz, as I told you earlier, Fritz, you can also pull the show up on your computer and you can see what's on the screen and what people are seeing. If that would help you at all, you can do that at CoachDaveLive.com. But we have it up on the screen right now. The hinge and square were placed six times the diameter of a circle and square. That's what's up on the screen right now, Fritz.
Okay. I was getting to your...
Bear with him, folks.
Again, I'm getting to the show. But anyway, all right, looking at that graphic, you can see that how they measured the distance between all of the, or the circle and the, okay, I see, Coach, I see you on there. I don't see the graphic, but let me get back to my.
Oh, okay.
Oops, that's not it. Hold on, folks.
That's okay, Fritz. That's all right. We'll get it.
A little technical difficulty here.
Because it's hard to teach.
You can see on that graphic right there that the diameter of the circle is 1,050 feet. And that recurs in a lot of circles in the Ohio Valley. Most of the hinges were either 660 or 666 feet in diameter. And the squares were 1,080 feet. And the significance of that is that 666 and 1,080 were two numbers that were part of a numerical codex called Gematria, where the Amorites saw 666 as the number for the sun and 1,080 was the number for the moon. So if you go to Seat Mound and stuff like that, all those squares are all 1,080 feet. The square represented the Earth, lunar mother. Of course, the circle represented the sun, and we have all that throughout the Ohio Valley where they were following this codex of Gematria.
So Fritz, you're saying that these mounds that are all over Ohio are basically built to these same type of standards, mathematical standards. And friends, what you see on the screen right now, I know this is hard for you to understand. Down here at the very bottom of the screen, you see what is the circle mound with an opening, a bit of an opening. That thing, folks, that is so huge. You have to understand how big this is. You just can't get a feel for it from looking at the screen. And then it goes over to what the line goes over to the left up to the, like 11 o'clock. That is what they call the octagon mound. You can see the eight, eight-sided mound that's up there. These things are connected together. And by the way, when you stand in the middle of either one of these, you can't see the other one. So whoever put these mounds here, geometrically, they could not see the other mound, which is up, you know, mile and a half away. This had to be done by somebody, as I say, who was sitting high and looking low. Would you agree with that, Fritz? Somebody had to be above this to be in order to be able to construct it.
Yeah, I mean, how would you check your work? So, yeah, when you're standing in the octagon, well, to give people an idea of the size, there is a regulation 18-hole golf course in the middle of the circle.
Mike, that's up to the left, Mike. Can you point up to the left, Mike, with your pointer so people can see it? Who's talking about? Yeah, right there. There's a golf course, folks, right there where Mike is pointing right now. There's a huge 18-hole golf course. And then down at the bottom, Mike, is what they call the circle mound. And that's, I don't know off the top of my head first, I don't know how big it is, but that's huge. We've taken, a lot of the people who are watching the show have been to the circle mounds, okay? So, again, folks, as Fritz just said, you couldn't be doing this with a shovel and a plow. They didn't have plows, but you couldn't do it. Go ahead, Fritz, I'm sorry.
Well, that just gives you an idea of just how immense this is. And geometrically, it's perfect. And then I don't have the graphics, but every one of those lines on that octagon aligns with one of the moon rises or moon sets. So there's like a maximum moon set, maximum moon rise, minimum moon set, minimum moon rise.
So these things are these things are
every
all
one of those.
They're all aligned with the moon and the stars, right, Fritz? Every one of these things has some type of astrological alignment with it as well. Mike, come down here at the bottom circle again if you can, because at the bottom circle, at the opening of this bottom circle, folks, right there, Mike. Go to that opening right at 1 o'clock. Folks, that aligns perfectly with the rising of the sun on the spring equinox, March 20th. The sun comes right up in that opening, so they knew that when they built it. Go ahead, Fritz.
Okay, I've read that, because I have a couple others, that it's May 1st. But
May 1st?
I know you said you were there when...
I was there one day on March.
And you saw it rise up.
Yes, sir, it did.
So they measured the distance between the circle and... The big circle is actually a hinge. And a hinge is a circular earthwork with an interior ditch, outer wall, and generally a gateway that aligns to a solar event. We all know Stonehenge, but if you look at a bigger picture of the stones, there is a circle ditch that goes around it and an outer wall, and then the gateway aligns to the summer solstice sunrise, I believe, and the winter solstice sunset, or I may have those turned around.
Hey, Fritz.
That's the hinge part of it. Of Fritz, the stone hinge.
The Indians weren't messing with this stuff, Fritz. This isn't Indian stuff, right, brother? This is the Indians didn't do this.
No, it isn't. And they measured 6 times 1050, or the diameter of the circle. So 6 times 1050, if you map that off, that's where you'll get to the circle. And then if you go to the middle of the octagon, that will take you to the square. It's the same, 6 times 1050.
Wow.
So we're looking at, 6,063. So we're looking at over a mile where you would have to be exact, you know, and you can't pace that off. And I don't believe they had rope where they roped it and then, you know, decided to build it there. Because why would they? Why would they care? If numerology didn't matter to them and mathematics didn't matter to them, you know, they would have built circle in the octagon here and then this looks like a good place for the circle, but they would not be these exact measurements that we're seeing. And another interesting fact, I never can remember the name of this, but you know, you look at the moon at night, and sometimes it's big and sometimes it's small. The ratio of, and I can't think of the name of small moon and big moon right now, but the ratio between the size of small moon and big moon is the same as the circle that's attached to the octagon and the large circular hinge, which is incredible that they would figure out that ratio. And I wanted to show you another graphic of just the mathematics. And that's the one you're going to see. Yep, maybe I didn't get it in there. I'm going through the photos that I sent to you.
Let me stop right here, Fritz. Let me ask this question, because I'm going to have you talk about the Serpent Mound here in a little bit. But Fritz, just talk about in general how many of these mounds there are in what you would call the Ohio Valley. I drove down yesterday down into southern Ohio, and I saw them everywhere, and most people don't even realize that the mounds are where they are. In other words, it could be on your farmland and you not understand the significance of it. Just as a general question, Fritz, what was the purpose of all of these mounds that are everywhere? Were they burial sites? What were they, Fritz?
Yeah, the burial mounds were just for that. They were for burials. And then they grew incrementally with, they would have a charnel house. And a charnel house is where they kept their dead. So it was this house and it was full of bones. And they were ancestral worshipers. So they would go to the charnel house and they would pray to the dead, because they believed that the dead could change their fortunes in life. So when they went to the charnel house, they weren't praying to one, you know, Uncle Leroy in there. Once they went into the charnel house, they became the collective of the dead. At some point, they would burn the charnel house, and then they would put dirt over that, and then they'd build another charnel house. So a lot of the mounds incrementally grew larger and larger. But there's other mounds where they put people in, like Grave Creek, and then just built the mound over the top of them. Grave Creek, the bottom chamber had a man that was 8.5 feet in length. And then they built the mound, and then there was an upper chamber where there was a woman, and she was like 7.5 feet. So there's some different ways that they did it. They're not all the same, but they all do contain burials.
Okay, Fritz, let me take this a different direction here a bit. You know, here where we live, we've got the Octagon Mounds, Mount Butler's Golf Course. We've got the Circle Mounds. We've got the Fairmont Mound. We've got the Glenford Fort. We've got Geller Park. What's going on here, Fritz, in the land of legend, Licking County, Ohio, that these things, are these just burial grounds of high potentates, Fritz?
Well, the burial mounds were portals for the dead, where they could come and go. It says in the Book of Enoch about the Nephilim and the giants is that their spirits will reside on earth. So the burial mounds are all active as far as the dead go.
Folks, you understand that? Fritz just mentioned portals, openings into the demonic world, into the spirit realm. These are elevators, if you will, or Fritz, I use the term cell towers of power is in fact going in and out of these edifices. Would you agree with that, Fritz? These are power stations?
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. But the dead are still there. and their portals, you know, for the dead to come in and out of. Well, like the Grave Creek Mound has Moundsville Penitentiary, and that's like ranked like the third most haunted place in the U.S.
That's Moundsville, West Virginia, folks. At Moundsville, they have a prison built right on the mound, actually. And it is a haunted place. Yep.
Well, the mound is in front of the prison. It's intact. It's the largest burial mound in the Ohio Valley. And it's just over the line going into West Virginia. So, you know, like from Newark, I think it's 90 minutes and you can be there to see it.
Hey, Fritz, why Ohio?
I don't know why they went to Ohio, but, you know, you have hills, which they preferred, and then you had grasslands, you had some prairie land that was there, you had multiple water sources that were going south to the Ohio River. So that could have been it. I don't know anywhere, any other state where you have the waterways traveling south to the Ohio.
Well, but I would also say this, Fritz. It is the beginning of the Appalachian Mountains. Ohio is. You go west here in Ohio, it gets flat. You go east, and it, as you know, rises and falls a great deal. So I wonder if there's some significance in regards to the mountains. Let me switch gears on you real quick, Fritz. Mike, pull up there the Serpent Mound, because we're going – and then I know some of these folks are going to have some questions for you, Fritz. So here's what – Fritz, we got to –
before you do that, do the one graphic. It's green, and it shows the circle and the square. I wanted to talk about that just for a brief second, and then we'll go to the Serpent.
Okay, hang on. We're getting to it. Okay, there it is. It's a square. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wanted to point this out. The circle is 3,700 feet in circumference. Adjacent to that, and it looks real close on this picture. It looks like you could walk, but, you know, it's a half a mile or so away.
Where is this, Fritz? Is this Newark?
Yeah.
Okay.
And one wall of the square is still there. But the square, each side was 925 feet. So 925 times 4 is 3,700 feet. So they had to know the circumference of the circle, pi r squared, and then extrapolate that and divide it by 4 to make the square. So they had to know. They had to know how to figure out the circumference of a circle. But I thought that was a good example of saying
so
they knew by math.
When do they say these were built, Fritz? When do historians say they were built as compared to when do you say they were built?
I think they're thinking around 200 BC. However, Brad Lepper did take some charcoal. They did a dig in the wall about 20 years ago and found some charcoal, and it dated back to 800 BC. But because that wasn't part of their paradigm their belief of the existence of these people, he never published that report. But those findings are from one of his graduate assistants who talked to Wayne May of Ancient American Magazine. He was the one that relayed this to me, but he said, you know, they tested that charcoal, and he goes, it went back 800 BC. So he said it could be even older than that. Mm. But they want to believe that around 500 BC, 400 BC. So this pushed it back about 300 years. And in archaeology, if it's something doesn't fit the paradigm, you just don't publish it. So
Fritz, but you're confident, Fritz. There is evidence and there is proof of skeletons, skulls they've excavated giants out of some of these mounds. Is that true, Fritz?
Oh, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. Now, at Newark, there have been some large skeletons, but, you know, the earthworks were not burial places.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't find them in the ceremonial, or I'll say the geometric earthworks.
Right.
You're not going to find them in there, but all the mounds that were around there, and Newark probably had, oh my gosh, at least 200 burial mounds in the county at one time. Now I think there's about 7 or 8.
They're everywhere, right?
About
right.
7, 8, 10 maybe that you can still see. So most of them have been destroyed. So a lot of earthworks and burial mounds around that area.
Rich, do you believe there's still bones inside some of those mounds?
A few of them have not been excavated. A lot of them have been excavated. Ohio Historical Society was on quite a tear of just digging into everything. And generally when they were done digging, the mound was gone. So they leveled it.
Mm-hmm.
There still are mounds that have not been excavated. There are a few.
And some of them we would like to get on private property and be able to do it, because a lot of private property own it. Let me freeze it right here, Fritz. If somebody wants to jump in here real quick, before we go to the Serpent Mound, I don't want to lose our class here. If anybody got a question, raise your hand up and it'll pop up on my screen and we'll let you come in if you have a question for Fritz. Again, we're speaking with Fritz Zimmerman. And Fritz Zimmerman is probably the world's greatest expert on the mounds, the mound builders, the Nephilim, the fallen angels that at one point seemed to have populated this area. Rich Wallace, come on in, Rich.
Hi, good morning, Dave. Hey, good morning, Fritz. I live next door to Dave over in Indiana, and we got a state park.
Fritz is in Fort Wayne, by the way, Rich.
Oh, well, then you're going to know what I'm going to say then. You know about the Mound State Park then, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't need to ask you any more questions then. You know about it.
Okay.
I was just wondering if you were aware of the park.
Hey, listen, if there's a mound if there's a mound somewhere, Fritz knows about it. Okay. Come on, Glenn.
I spent 12 years in the field photographing mounds, and it's in my travel guide, the Nephilim Chronicles, the travel guide to the ancient ruins in the Ohio Valley.
Pull that up there, Mike.
Archaeologists only knew of about 20 mounds in the state. I visited 400 sites in the state of Indiana and photographed 85. So if you really want to see prehistoric Indiana, get my travel guide, because I got 85 mound sites in Indiana in there. And a lot of those, 65 of them, I was the first to ever photograph. So yeah, I've been everywhere. It would be hard to tell me about a mound, not that they're not there, that I don't know about.
Hey, Fritz, what do you think, before I get Glenn in here? Hey, Fritz, of all the mounds that you've visited, what do you think is the most significant one? What's the real high place, you think, Fritz?
It'd probably have to be Newark, just because it's somewhat preserved. The circle and the octagon are still there. The circle's intact. Part of the sacred via still there. And just the numerology and the mathematics which it took to construct that. Go to the screen where I have the triangle on it, and then we'll get to the Serpent Mound. But I just want to show this one last, where it says Raccoon Creek on the top. It's just white. It's a white graphic.
It's up there now, Fritz.
Yeah, so if you go from middle of the octagon to the middle of the great circle, and then to Geller Hill. And Geller Hill is the highest point of land in that whole area. And
lived here my whole life. Fritz, I lived here my whole life. I never knew Geller Park. I never knew that. Go ahead.
If you go on top of that hill, you can see these slight ridges because it was farmed. But that was full of burial mounds up there on top of that. But if you connect those dots, you get a perfect isosceles triangle.
Isn't that something, folks? Look at that.
So the distance between the middle of the circle and the middle of the octagon to Geller Hill are both 7,392 feet. So we're looking at about a mile and a half.
Unbelievable.
But again, I just want to show you the mathematics that are involved in the construction of the Newark Earthworks. And then I think the rest of the slides are of the serpent. So if you want to go there, you can.
Okay.
The one is the serpent with a bunch of lines, and it shows all the alignments. Oh, I guess I got one of there, the Hopewell Road. I wanted to show that to you, Coach, because that woods in the distance there is where that Hopewell Road is probably still intact.
Mike, see if you can pull that one back up. You've had it up a couple of times. Hopewell. Sorry, folks, this is personal stuff for me because this is all around me, right? Not that one, Mike. There it is. The Ohio Hopewell Road in Newark. Okay, it's up there now, Fritz. By the way, we have a road now, here.
Do you see it?
Hopewell Road. Yeah, yeah.
You see that line going through the field?
Yes.
Okay, then it's going to go into those woods. And in that, those woods, it should be completely intact. And those are the woods we need to get into.
Oh, is that right? Huh. So you think the water, oh my goodness. Not able to get in?
Yeah, right for that little tunnel woods right there.
Yeah.
It should be intact and very visible during the winter month. But that's right there at Geller Hill. So Geller Hill is just to the, if you're on the right bottom corner of that picture, Geller Hill is just to your right of that.
I know where it is. It's a park, Fritz. It's a park now, Geller Park, right? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and from the top of the hill, you can see that field.
And you think, wow. And you think the woods, the forest part of it has not been touched?
Yeah, I think it's intact in those woods.
We'll have to figure out a way to get in there. Glenn wanted to ask you something. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yes, thank you, Fritz. What happened to the bones they found in the excavation? Where did they go?
You know, a lot of them, being 2,000 years old, had the consistency of wet chalk. So even though you could see the length of the skeletal remains, pulling them out was nearly impossible because they would disintegrate.
Oh, that makes sense.
And then sometimes they would dig these bones up. People would come by and one person would take a shin bone, another person would take an arm bone, somebody might get the skull, and they were just scattered like that. Sometimes after church, one of the things they would do is go dig into a burial mound. And people would bring food. And if they found a giant, then they'd all take a piece. But there were so many mounds. That was one of the activities they would do. And then in my encyclopedia, you could just read account after account of the Smithsonian. If they caught wind of somebody excavating a large skeleton, they would go and get it. You know, and this is back in the late 1800s, so they would have to take a train and then get a horse and buggy and, you know, go into Pig's Knuckle, Indiana, which might be 40, 50 miles off the railhead. But they went to great efforts to get these bones.
Silver, come on in.
Thank you, sir. Fritz, one of the things that it talks about in the book of Enoch is the height of these beings. And it ranges, depending upon your interpretation or translation, it will either be 450 feet tall or 4,500 feet tall. And you were mentioning earlier about the expanse of these things. someone our size really can't see and measure that well across that kind of a distance to build something like that. And we probably could today with the technology we have, but back then, no. The thing that concerns me is if these were built by giants, okay, they were obviously guided by their fathers, who are angelic beings. Nephilim are not demons. They're offspring from demons and humans. And it says, it talks a lot about the fact that they were educated. Man was educated by these 200 or so demons. And then they basically got impregnated. And next thing, based on the height and the size of these beings, I would say mama died in childbirth, Okay. So.
Great question, Silver. How big were they, Fritz? How big were they?
Excuse me. The largest recorded in Ohio is about 9.5 feet, and that was over in Coshocton County. And there were 5 or 6 that were all about that same size, 9.5 feet. If you read the history of Coshocton County, which is from the late 1800s, the people that were there when these bones were being excavated actually signed a document that's in the in that history, that they witnessed the mound being dug into, they witnessed the skeletons being uncovered, and they witnessed how they were measured, and they were all big. But 9.5 feet is about as big as they get. The 12, 20-footers, 40-footers, that just never happened. And there's a lot of confusion about the translation of the measurements from ancient times to now. Even Og, who is the king of the Amorite tribe, and who was killed by Joshua, he was about 9.5 foot. So don't believe the 18, 20, 45 foot. In my experience, my research, there's no real evidence that they were ever that big.
So Fritz,
about 9.5 foot.
Fritz, were these,
which is
were
a
these,
monster of a man, but
were they,
not
were they,
20 foot.
Were they a mixture, Fritz, were they a standalone race of people, which is what a lot of people would say? Said, okay, well, we found them. All right, it was a race of people that died out. Or was it a combination of what we would call the Nephilim, meaning fallen angels reproducing with women and creating this hybrid being? What's your deep belief on that, Fritz?
Well, the women that they were mixing with were actually Neanderthals.
Hmm.
Because if you read literally half of my book, the encyclopedia, is description of the skulls, which are more Neanderthal than they are modern. They all have bulging eyebrows.
So they weren't having sex with Marilyn Monroe. Is that what you're saying, Fritz?
No. It happened early on, and it happened with the Neanderthal. And that could explain some of the genetic anomalies, like double rows of teeth.
Six fingers.
Some had horns protruding from their foreheads. So there were some genetic problems with the giants, or at least some of them. But they didn't have the same type of skull as a modern skull. And over in England, where we find hinges and mounds and circles, almost everything you find in England, you can find in the Ohio Valley. And their skull types were identical over there as over here. So you had more of an archaic type of skull than a modern skull.
Fritz, what happened? What happened to them, Fritz? What happened to these giants?
Most of them got absorbed into the Dakota Sioux people. The Mandan Indians, and these were Indo-European people because they were Cro-Magnon, so they were, you know, the roots of Europe. They were absorbed. Early on, people like George Catlin, when he visited the Mandan Indians, his history says they were in the Ohio Valley. So you had these Amorites, and then you had these Dakota Sioux. They were already living in the Ohio Valley, and these Amorites just kind of mingled with them. So that's why there's somewhat of a transition from straight hinges until the hinges get shallower ditches. The geometrics go through the roof, but they're being slowly absorbed into the Dakota Sioux. So Catlin goes out to the Dakotas, and the Mandan Sioux, he said, looked European. Some had red hair, some had blonde hair, green eyes, blue eyes. So how could that have happened? How could the genetic makeup of a people who supposedly originated from China have red hair and blue eyes? So just the thousands of years that they commingled changed the bloodline.
Man,
there was a man over there.
Well, listen, we're on a bit of a time crunch. We've got about 15 minutes left here today. Mike, let's go to the Serpent Mound, Fritz. Let's talk a little bit about the Serpent Mound. And
okay, you can go to the graphic. It just shows the serpent. You can see all of the lunar and solar alignments.
There it is. It's up on the screen right now. This, folks, this is where we're going to go on Sunday afternoon. Remember, I live... I'm a stone's throw away from what Fritz was talking about earlier with the Octagon Mound and the Circle Mounds, and Newark, Ohio being Nephilim Central is what L.A. Marzulli says. And I think Fritz would probably agree with that to a certain degree. This spot that we're looking at here now is in southern part of Ohio, and it's probably an hour, 45 minutes from our home. But this is one of the most amazing effigies, whatever you would call it, in all of the world, right here in Adams County, Ohio. Go ahead, Fritz, and talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Okay, from the graphic, you can see that the head of the serpent, and this sits on a peninsula, and I don't know how many millions of years ago, but a meteor hit that area, so that peninsula was created. So when you're at the Serpent Mound, you're basically on this cliff. So if you kind of roll down, you would fall to your death. So it just sits on this peninsula, and then on this peninsula is where the Serpent Mound sits. But the head is to the summer solstice sunset, and then all those little bends in the serpent itself are all aligned to the lunar events, just like the octagon is. Now, what's interesting about this is that at the head of the serpent, there's the egg of what the serpent is supposedly eating. There was a stone mound, and then there was a monolith, a pillar, a stone pillar. And I have photographs of both of those. I have one of the monolith that was thrown down the cliff over the hill, and then another one where you can see stone altar, or what was left of it when it was photographed. I think it was larger than that, but I think some of the stones were removed. So what this tells us is that this is more megalithic, and then of course megalithic is stonework, and we do find that throughout the Ohio Valley. We have stones with doorway lintels in them, which is identical to what you would find over in England. So the megalithic era was dying, so and they were building hinges instead of mound, or, you know, stones in the middle of them, or stone circles. They were putting burial mounds over in England. And then by the time we get here, that's what they're doing. But we do find some evidence of megalithic builders, and Serpent Mound is one. So within that egg, there was a stone cairn, and then there was a monolith. It's up there. So when you go, be sure to, there's a little path that goes to the right. And you want to go down that path. It'll take you to the bottom. And then you can look up on this cliff head. And down there is where you're going to find that pillar. It's easy to find.
Folks, one of the things I don't want you to miss this as you're looking at the screen. Every one of those curvatures in the snake's body is perfectly aligned with something having to do with the lunar cycle. Everyone, these guys didn't just go out and build mounds in a circle. There was some real technical excavation and planning and formation that was done. That as you can see on the screen, all of these things line up with something having to do with the lunar cycle. So this is almost otherworldly.
Which takes 18 years.
That cycle takes
18 years, 18 point something years. So just to make the alignment would have taken 18 years. But imagine if you have, you know, especially when we get in this time of year, you could easily have 5 days where it's cloudy. So it might have taken another 18 years just to get the alignment, to have a clear night where you could, you know, align to the particular moonset that you wanted. So,
Fritz, what do you think?
And again, when you visit the Serpent Mound, it's hard to detect from the ground. I mean, you can obviously see this thing, you know, rolling back and forth, but you really only get what you're looking at from the air.
Yeah, otherwise it's just some mounds that you're walking upon, right?
Yeah, I mean, you just see, you know, this mound that's, you know, wiggling back and forth. And you can tell that it's a serpent, but if you're on one end looking to the other end, you can't tell what it is. If you're on the tail looking towards the head, you're like, yeah, I really can't make that out. I mean, you can't make out that, you know, it's a serpent with its mouth open, ready to eat this egg. So again, it's only visible from the air. So whoever they were building these for were sky people.
Fritz, what's the significance, in your opinion, of the egg? Why the serpent swallowing the egg, which is a sunset summer solstice eclipse? So geographically, at a specific point, and I don't want people to miss this. 18-year cycle. Folks, that means that you would have to chart it for 18 years to know where the sun was at this particular time. And how many sets of 18 years would you have to do to confirm that you've got the right pattern? This is unbelievable, really. What do you think the egg is, Sir Fritz?
There's different Egyptian graphics where the serpent is, two serpent heads are coming together at a sun symbol. So I'm not sure if it's a sun symbol and then the serpent eats the sun and then the sun is regenerated. Of course, summer solstice sunset would be the end of the longest days. So possibly the serpent is eating the egg to regenerate the egg for the upcoming spring equinox, when the days would become longer again. L.A. Marzulli has some theories that has something to do with Jesus Christ, that the serpent is eating the egg that would eventually become Christ.
Seed of the serpent, seed of the woman, yes. Yep.
Yeah. So that it's symbolic of basically killing Jesus.
Amen.
So
For Truth. Let me get somebody in there. For Truth, come on in.
Yeah, hello. I got a couple quick things. I met with a Native medicine man up here in Canada, and he told me a story about how the Serpent Mound used to be a meeting place, and the egg actually had a door, and inside the egg was a it was an echo chamber, and they would drum beat a certain beat, they would chant, and at the end of the serpent, where the tail curls, would create a portal. Now, it was an interesting story. I can't vet it, but that was what I was told, so I wanted to share that. But my question is, have you ever done any scientific tests of the mounds for iridium? Which is...
The Serpent Mound, that whole area is packed full of iridium.
See, so
some people think that UFOs come down and they mine the iridium there, and the Serpent Mound was a marker for them.
Interesting.
But it's rare, but no, that whole area is full of iridium. And what, it's around Serpent Mound as well.
What's the significance of that, Fritz? For those of us who are football coaches, what's the significance of iridium?
You know, I'm not real sure. I did a report on my newest book, which is Mysteries of Ancient America, Uncovering the Forbidden. And I have about four articles on the Serpent Mound, but one of them was the metals that they found, and one was iridium. And it's just very rare, you know.
Well, Fritz, could that could
come from outer space.
That's right. So that could be a connection between, a meteor, a meteorite, or something might have landed there that formed this ridge, and that's why this iridium is there. Would that be a possibility?
Yeah.
Is that what people would say?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Man, come on. Fritz, my head's spinning here. Help me wrap this thing up, Fritz. Fritz, is this why Ohio? Why this Nephilim Valley? And Fritz, are these demonic portals still active today, Fritz?
Yes, they are, and it's more so because there's covens of witches that two times I've been to the Serpent Mound. And there's been covens of witches that are there. And if you've watched any of LA's In Search of the Nephilim video series, I mean, there's one guy that was overtaken by a spirit, knocked him down at the Serpent Mound. He had to crawl back to his van. He had footage in another where a lady passed out because she got overwhelmed by some sort of spirit. So it's supercharged. There's all sorts of entities there. I think some of these entities have been brought there by these witches. So pray up before you go onto the ground.
In fact, Fritz, if I can just say this right now, folks, I'm going to fast all day Saturday. I would ask anybody that's going to go with us. They would fast as well, just for the spiritual power all day Saturday, and we'll show up at noon there on Sunday. Now, Stephanie, she's our local former Wiccans, Fritz. She says these demonic spirits forces guard the mounds. Would you concur with that?
That could very well be, because there's burial mounds around the serpent too. And you'll see those when you get on the ground. There were a few more than what's there now, but there was burials all around the mound. So those spirits are still there. So hey, she could be on point on that theory.
Fritz, we're going to have you back on, because this is just first of all, Fritz, there are a lot of Christians, as you know, probably better than anybody, who think you're crazy, who've never – I don't know if you can see me on the screen. You probably can't, Fritz. I got a tinfoil hat. I've fought my battles with people who say, you know, that's just tinfoil hat stuff. That's just crazy stuff. But Fritz, you've given your whole life to studying this stuff, and you know of which you speak, and you know this, brother, that there are strong, strong demonic forces, demonic powers, demonic portals that are connected with these mounds. Would you agree with that, Fritz?
Yes, very much so. And the Serpent Mound, if you look at it, the mound has three bends. The tail coils three times, and the serpent is pointed towards the confluence of three creeks. So 333.
Hey, Coach, can I ask a question?
Sure, go, Jack.
Fritz, is there a connection between the Ohio Valley and the Phoenicians coming down through the St. Lawrence and ending up going through the transcontinental waterway, and Ohio Valley being the end of it? Isn't that where they kind of ended up and got, they couldn't go back?
excuse me. Yes. Because, you know, the terminus is probably Lake Erie. And then if you go south from there, you can pick up the southern waterways heading towards the Ohio. But you kind of got to use the word Phoenician loosely. They were actually later than the Amorites. The Amorites came here early on, you know, probably around 2500 BC to mine the copper out of Isle Royal up in Wisconsin.
Well, they were doing the same thing in Nova Scotia and northern Maine. And the copper is exactly what you were talking about. And we believe that the Phoenicians are the ones that brought them, or the pre-Phoenicians, or whatever you want to call them.
Listen, man.
There's also megalithic works up that way. And then you get into American Stonehenge. So it kind of shows a progression. When they first came over here, they were called megalithic builders. And, you know, stone cairns and all the other stuff you're going to find out east. And then eventually, after Joshua eliminates them in their homeland, there was a mass exodus. Some of them went to England, and then some of them came here.
Hey, folks, something's happening here, and what it is ain't exactly clear. Fritz, this has been fascinating. When we close down here, just stay with us a second, because we have a bit of an after show as well. Folks, this stuff makes your head spin, doesn't it? Doesn't it? But it's all biblical. It's all connected. There is so much that they've taught us that is not true, and so much stuff that's true that they haven't taught us. And as Rush Limbaugh would say, we're on a relentless pursuit of the truth. Go to Amazon and pick up some of Fritz's materials. He is the world's expert, folks, on the Nephilim, on the mounds, on all this stuff that's going on. And Fritz, just for the record, as we sign off here, this is fallen angel technology. Would you agree with that, Fritz?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because in the book of Enoch, we know that the angels gave the giants the secrets. And one of those secrets was mathematics, the tracking of the sun and the moon, which you're going to witness at the serpent mound. So all those secrets, if you read about those in the book of Enoch, you can find those in the Ohio Valley.
The land of legend, Fritz Zimmerman. Fritz Zimmerman. Hey, Fritz, what's your website?
My website is Amazon. That's where all my books are at. So if you just do an author search, Fritz Zimmerman, or the Encyclopedia of Ancient Giants, or my mysteries books, and that's a fun read. Those are all the crazy things that I've found over the years of what people have found. It's a fun read, about 100 different stories of crazy discoveries and things like that. Or the mound guide. So if you're going to the serpent, like you guys are going to the serpent, if you had my mound guide, there's like a 30-foot mound really close to the serpent mound, but it's address restricted. But all of the Ohio Historical Society's address restricted mounds, I have given directions to all of those. So you'll see ancient Ohio like you never knew existed.
Okay, Fritz.
In Indiana and West Virginia and Kentucky as well.
Thanks for getting our head spinning this morning, Fritz. My, oh, my, oh, my. We'll have you on again, brother. God bless you. Thanks for your time. Don't hang up, Fritz. Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead, Clay, real quickly.
Hey, Fritz, are you going to stay in for a second?
Yeah, stay with us, Fritz.
Yeah. Gotta,
all right, thanks. Hey, God bless you, folks. Have a great weekend. Pray for us. If you're going to go with us, let me know. Fast on Saturday. We're going into enemy-held territory down in Adams County, Ohio. God bless you. Thanks, Fritz. We'll see you all on Monday.